Fred Film Radio, Venice Film Festival, Italy.
We're waiting for your sign, Ilaria. Well, thank you for being here, all of you. I'm sorry that you must follow this thing about accessibility. Possibly you're a little bit tired. I know your schedule is particularly intense. But do you manage to see films outside Germania di Autori as well?
Yes, a lot.
Oh, okay. And
we don't sleep. Yeah.
This short conversation is about accessibility, film accessibility in particular. As you possibly realize, there's nothing accessible at the Venice Film Festival. We tried a few years ago to make some films accessible, but making a film festival accessible is particularly complicated, particularly for you know, eight festivals where films are premieres in most cases, so it's very difficult to get the material in advance. And also, unfortunately, among filmmakers, there is not enough awareness about the importance of accessibility yet. We are trying to do that. We started almost 10 years ago, and for a few years we, as I said, made four or five films accessible. Then the other problem is that Lido di Venezia is possibly the least accessible place, so we created audio description for a number of films, and then we managed to get one or two blind people, so it was really a little bit disappointing. So we decided to run the festival and try to raise awareness about this and make other events accessible. My name is Federico Spoletti. I founded a company called Subti and another company called Subti Access that deals with accessibility, cultural accessibility. We do mainly films, but also cultural events, conferences, and any kind of events, trying to make accessible, but also make people know that accessibility is a right. There is an international legislation that goes back to the UN Convention for the Person with Disabilities in 2006. That states that all information and cultural content should be accessible for people with disability, sensory impairments, so blind people, visually impaired, and the deaf and hearing impaired. And this legislation has been transposed in national legislation, but even if there is a directive, a European directive, that the most recent is the European Accessibility Act that was published in 2019. It should have been transposed in all EU national legislation by June 2022. But the problem is that many countries transposed the legislation but didn't put any penalties if you don't follow them. So the result is that the situation is very different from one country to another. If you think of the UK, for example, it's possibly a unique country where everything is subtitled for the deaf and hard of hearing, and almost 30-40% of the content on television, for example, is also audio described. I think that the reason is because there were some political forces or some specific politicians that, of course, embraced the accessibility topic as a reason to get votes, but it worked, and in some ways, this culture of inclusion and accessibility is far ahead. There are other countries, like Italy, for example, where the situation is really bad. And I'll show you in a bit a couple of slides from a survey that has been conducted by the EBU, the European Broadcasting Union, that investigated with 37 different broadcasters in all European countries the situation of accessibility, for example, on television. And maybe, well, here you can see, for example, I don't know if you can, if you manage to see, because it's very small, but you see the broadcasters that participated in the survey. If you go on, Chiara,
yeah.
There is a situation, for example, of subtitling in television, and you see that all broadcasters in the EU actually offer subtitling for the deaf and hard of hearing, but the percentage of the content that is actually subtitled varies greatly from one country to another. In the UK, we raise 99-100%, and if you see the light blue countries, they are the ones where we reach 90% of the content that has been subtitled. But if you see to the orange countries, like Italy, for example, we reach 20-21%. So we really hope that things change for a number of reasons. First of all this right, promotion of diversity, equity and inclusion that started in the US, it's actually giving a boost, I think, to accessible versions, because one of the categories of people that should be always represented are also the people with sensory disabilities. And the other reasons is that the European Accessibility Act that I mentioned before is trying to support another two points of view. The first perspective is that the obligation for the content producer to make content accessible is not only an obligation for the public broadcasters, as it used to be for this, but also for private content creators. So since 2025, everyone who creates a film, for example, has to create also audio description and subtitle for the deaf and hard of hearing. And so we hope that this changes a little bit. The other aspect is that the one of the main aims of this legislation is actually try to break the barriers among different countries. For example, we are in a situation where Italian audio description in Italy can be used in Switzerland for Italian content in Switzerland, because legislation is different. So we have to process very absurd, procedures that actually change really just a little bit and doesn't make any difference for the user. So hopefully things are going to change. Also, the perspective of accessibility changed a lot. Since 5 years ago, audiovisual accessibility was a sort of a branch of audiovisual translation. It was seen as a translation from words into written form, if you mention subtitles, or audio description is a VCR, the translation of images into words. Now, the perspective has changed, and actually, we are seeing translation as a branch of accessibility, meaning that if the concept of disability is not seen anymore as something to allow people who have some limitations to enjoy sort of content, but the other way around, if you think of when you are in a country where you don't know the language, for example, you are in Japan, you don't speak Japanese, you have a sort of a sensory impairment when you're there, because you can't communicate, you can't understand film, for example. So this is going, I think, to change, because also the perspective that was, let's see, in a sort of a particularist approach is moving into a universal approach, and hopefully things are going to change. I'm confident of this. And we are trying to promote inclusive festivals. We are launching a few festivals now in Europe. They're starting here in Italy on the 25th of October. Creating a festival almost completely accessible, with all films selected, also with subtitles and audio descriptions, and also with all the collateral events, the Q&As, masterclass with live transcription. And the idea is also to I think you realize that attending a festival, particularly in your situation here at this time, is a unique experience that allows you to, you know, enter five different cultures in a day. It's a life-changing experience for me. It was a life-changing experience. I was a, you know, a gray tax consultant in another life, and then I went to a film festival. I realized that there was a life outside that dreariness of that life. And I simply believe that in 2023, with the technology we have now, the fact that someone who may be deaf or blind go to the cinema and he can't enjoy the magic of the film is actually, it's simply discrimination right now, also because costs are really low. The survey I was mentioning showed that the cost of making content accessible in, among the broadcaster, the European broadcaster, is 0.61% of the cost of the whole, you know, production. So it's really nothing. But still, when you talk with film distributors and also filmmakers, and you talk about the importance of having good quality accessibility and having subtitles and audio description, they say, well, but it's very expensive and it's in the interest of a small number of people. That, you know, that's not true for a number of reasons. We know that the average age is growing. We have terrible listening habits, for example. We listen music with headphones, with, you know, loud music, and we, unfortunately, statistics tell us that we are becoming deaf, have a hearing earlier, and particularly after 65 years old, at some time we are going to experience, unfortunately, some form of impairment. So it's not actually the interest of a small number of people, and then we know that 80% of people that actually use subtitles is not only people with hearing impairments. We are multitasking. We do many things at the same time. There are researches that shows that in Australia, for example, 40% of people watch soap operas with audio description because, you know, soap operas don't have such high creative, you know, content sometimes. The setting is always the same. The people is always the same. You only want to know what happens so we can do other things and activate audio description, for example. So it's... you know, obviously there is a small group of people that need accessibility, but accessibility is useful also for a number of people that, you know, could live without it, but it's helped if it's available. And we all know to airports, or we know all, you know, noises environments, we activate subtitles, or we go to with social media. If we are in a library, we activate subtitles. So it's something that also has to be done, because as I said before, we are living an incredible changes with technology. There is still, you know, making a film accessible is complicated. It can be done automatically for the moment, yet completely automatically. A film, as you know better than me, it's a text with different components. You have verbal sign, acoustic signs, and if you decide to translate or to make a film accessible, you interact directly with that one component, but you have to do that taking all the other components into account. So subtitles must be synchronized, and the accessibility audio description, for example, must be included in very specific spaces between dialogue. So it's complicated, but I think that in a few years, possibly maybe less years, now we have speech recognition, we have image recognition as well, so we are going into a point where also the description would be, if not completely automated, but, you know, like translation, you know how ChatGPT works now. Everything is a little bit flat, but it's an incredible help for translation. So, usually people ask me, but I'm a translator, will I work in the future?
I'm not so sure.
I think that the ones that are actually good translators, that they can understand and have something, you know, the better ones will be possibly more editors than to be translators, but they will work in the content anyways. going. Anyway, now Chiara, who is a subtitler and an audio describer, and she has a past in, she had a company also dealing with accessible version for the theater in particular, will just tell you some of the most common practices to make films accessible. And then we'll see a short, completely accessible with open accessibility. It's a little bit of a stretch, but you are going to see this short with subtitles for the hard of hearing and also audio description open, so we can listen all together. Usually, of course, it's not normal that you have all both forms of accessibility, but just to make you understand what making a film accessible means, which is not really complicated. And what we are trying to do, and then I'll give you the floor, Chiara, is actually trying to make young filmmakers aware about the importance of taking into account also the audience that actually perceives a film with subtitles or with audio description, which is a segment that is also commercially important. But what we realize is that film schools at the moment don't say anything about accessibility. So accessibility and translation as well comes in the distribution phase. The translators and access service providers usually don't have any contact with the creative team, and they are forced to create those versions in a couple of days with a small budget, and of course that compromises the quality. While if filmmakers, they must be free, of course, to make their choices, but if they know that such choices could leave out a number of their audiences, they could at least make the choice with a reason. And there is at the moment a notion called accessible filmmaking. I don't know if some of you have heard about it. It's a sort of a theory that has been launched in the UK, trying to create a link between translators and filmmakers and making try to integrate accessibility and translation since the development of the project, not the last project, at the last moment. And there are a few filmmakers that embraced it, and so hopefully things will change. Also, because all films now are co-production, because actually translation, for example, comes into the beginning, because it's far less happy to talk. And so let's hope that things change. Chiara, go.
Okay, so I'm Chiara. I saw some of your faces surprised to see me here, just because I know more or less all of you. Only five of you are still waiting for the interview. So actually, as Federico already said, I've been working as a subtitler and audio describer for cinema and live events since 2016, so this is my main job. I want to thank Federico for this invitation and Le Giornate as well, and we have been working together for too much for 8 years now, and it's always a pleasure to be part of such events with SUBT and Fred Film Radio. Maybe my part of the lesson of this workshop might be quite boring, but I hope not so much. Interesting as well. I will go more in depth with the theory of subtitling and audio description, but starting from the basics. So what is an audiovisual text? So a film. You experience film so many times during this, also during these days, and you realize that films are polysemiotic texts that involve different reception channels. So you will find verbal auditory elements, such as dialogues, but also verbal visual elements, written signs, or written text, and also nonverbal auditory elements, music, sound effects, and nonverbal visual elements, body language, setting, costumes, how actors are moving, and so on. The aim of audiovisual translation, but then of accessibility, that is a step further actually to translation, is to translate not only the verbal part of this audiovisual text, and this is mainly has to do with translation, so to go beyond linguistic and cultural barriers. But with accessibility, we have to make sure that also the non-verbal channels are taken into account, okay? So all those parts of the film that maybe are not so easy to be enjoyed by people with sensory impairments. This is what accessibility has to do with. And I, whenever I talk about accessibility, I always quote this definition made by Diaz-Sintas and Remaja, who are theorists in this field, who said that whether the hurdle is a language or a sensorial barrier, the aim of the translation process is exactly the same, that is, to facilitate access to an otherwise hermeneutic source of information and entertainment. So this is what accessibility services are about. Now, let's see some of the most common accessibility techniques, audiovisual translation techniques. First of all, we have dubbing. Italy, for sure. I think that the Italian representative, I do not remember her name, or maybe she is not here, right? Okay, she will come. Dubbing is, Italy is a dubbing country, for sure. We have very few chances to watch film in the original language. What dubbing is that the original dialogues are translated into a different language, and this translated speech is recorded and replaces the original soundtrack. So the voice of the actors is completely lost in dubbing. Then we have the voiceover that instead is quite typical of, for example, documentaries in the Eastern countries, where the translated speech overlaps with the original speech, so with the original soundtrack, but it is kept at a higher volume than the original one. So you hear both voices, both dialogues, but the translated one is at a higher volume, okay? Then we have live re-speaking, that has to do also with live subtitling somehow, because in this case, and this technique is usually used during sports events, live events mainly. With this technique, the source text is orally translated by a speaker, and thanks to the voice recognition softwares, this translated text is then automatically written into subtitles. Okay, this is something that happens live during the events. Then we have probably the most common audiovisual translation technique, that is subtitling. In this case, differently from dubbing, the speech is conveyed through written text. Okay, so translation is given, of the dialogue is given, but in written form, with no modification of the original soundtrack. Then we have also surtitles. As you may understand from the name, the difference is only in sur-sub. Sur-sub, this means that the position of the subtitles is different. And usually subtitles are used for live events such as theater performances, operas, because they are usually placed above the stage or on the seat's back. Then we have, again, always in the branch of subtitling, subtitles for the deaf and hard of hearing that usually shorten with SDH. So whenever you see SDH, this means subtitles for deaf and hard of hearing, where not only dialogues should be translated or should be written during the film, but also the auditory message shall be there. And should be conveyed through written text. Of course, also in this case, with no modification of the original soundtrack. Then we have audio descriptions. So these are services thanks to which blind people or visually impaired people have access to cultural content such as films. And they are actually less common, I think, among the, you know, in the awareness, in the knowledge of people, because audio descriptions for the blind are captions, descriptive captions that are included, inserted into the pauses among dialogues. Okay, they are pre-recorded by a professional speaker, and they are mounted inserted in the original soundtrack whenever dialogue is not there, okay? Or at least we should try as much as possible to describe when dialogue is not there. We also have audio subtitling for the blind, and we will see what this means in the short film that we will show you. Because in the case when the film is subtitled, okay, but blind people cannot read subtitles, then these subtitles are voiced, basically, okay, are recorded as well, with a different voice, usually, different voice from the audio description voice. And in this case, of course, thanks to audio subtitling, also dialogues and subtitles are made accessible to blind people. Now we will focus only on subtitles and audio description. Subtitles first appeared during the early 20th century in the form of intertitles in silent films. I don't know if you have an idea of what intertitles were, okay? They were written signs just placed between film sequences, okay? And it was very easy and cost-effective for filmmakers who could actually shoot their film in one language and then translate only the intertitles to distribute the film worldwide.
Can I just add something?
Yeah.
I mentioned before the fact that now translation is in the distribution step, you know, of the life of the film. Actually, at that time, they were ahead in some perspectives, because intertitles were done in all languages since the beginning, so films actually were born multi-language already. Then with voice, with, you know, when silent films stopped, it actually went back. What would you say that?
Yeah, I was
particularly interesting.
Yeah, and of course, some problems came when during the 20s, 1927 more or less, sound recordings were introduced, because in that case, with sound recordings, people could hear the actors speak, okay? And so this led to accessibility problems, because foreign films were not accessible due to linguistic barriers. So dubbing was the solution, but actually at the beginning it was very expensive, as it is nowadays, I think. and so intertitles became subtitles.
Do you know why in some countries we have dubbing and in other countries we have subtitles? What's the reason for having dubbing in some specific countries? That depends on the sort of, you know, regime that try to make everything national. For example, in Italy we had fascism. In Spain, with Franco, everything has to be nationalized in Spanish. So that's why, actually, dubbing is still, you know, a practice particularly common, because then, you know, the audience get used to that way, and we're trying now, for example, here to go back to subtitles. Yeah.
What about the voiceover? Like, where does that go originally? Because I'm from Poland, and like, yeah, we do voiceover everything, and people find it very bizarre, but I'm wondering.
It is very bizarre from someone.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I don't know. I think, you know, voiceover is a cheaper version of dubbing. So it could be, that could be one of the reasons. Yeah. Because with voiceover, you don't have to make sure that, you know, the labial
sync with lip movements is so, there. Yeah.
So it's actually cost one third of dubbing. But dubbing costs 15 times more than subtitling. So that's, you know, when you go to an Italian distributor and you say you have to distribute this film also in the original language with subtitles, and they answer, yeah, but it's expensive. So, come on.
Okay, so let's go on with the types of subtitles that we actually have. They are classified according to four parameters: language, preparation time, technical features, and distribution formats. According to language, we have intralingual or interlingual subtitles. Interlingual subtitles are those subtitles that are made in the same language as the film, okay? So, for example, whenever you have a film that is shot in a dialect, okay, subtitles are made in the language of that dialect. As, I don't know if you remember Trainspotting, It has Scottish dialect, subtitles are in English. Those are interlingual subtitles. But they are also used for didactic purposes, okay? And also SDH might be intralingual, okay? So subtitles for deaf and hard of hearing might be intralingual and interlingual as well. Interlingual instead means between two languages. So the interlingual subtitles are the translation of the original dialogues. According to the preparation time, we have offline and online subtitles. This means that offline are pre-prepared subtitles. Subtitles in this case are created once the film has been shot and before its distribution. Online subtitles are instead like live speaking, live subtitling during live events. We also have open or closed subtitles. Open subtitles are, I think, the most common ones, at least in streaming platforms, because with open subtitles, you have the chance to turn subtitles on or off. They are synchronized with the original soundtrack of the film thanks to time codes, okay? So we will see that there is a particular activity called spotting, thanks to which the subtitler clearly identifies when the subtitle has to appear and when it has to disappear from the screen. This is called spotting. And instead, closed subtitles are subtitles that are usually, but actually, it's a very odd kind of subtitles. I think it's not used anymore. But subtitles here are printed, are laser printed on the film, and there's no way for the viewer, for the user to turn them off. Okay. Distribution formats. Maybe it is not so easy to realize when you watch a subtitle content, but to an expert eye, if you read subtitles in cinema, they are different from those that you can read in TV programs, for example. They do differ in terms of characters to be read, because in cinema you have a wider screen, so you can read more characters, more words, basically. In TV, this is not so easy, so characters are reduced. And also the condensation of the information is different, because in cinema, subtitles are usually respect more the original dialogues. In TV, instead, we have to condensate. Less characters, less words. Streaming platforms and web are, I would say, more similar to cinema, just because you have the chance to rewind the content and read the subtitles again. So maybe the characters number is a bit bigger. Okay, key features. What? This is very technical of my job, actually. So,
if you ever think to become a subtitler,
yeah, exactly. I will give you some hints.
There is a future for that work.
There are some must concepts a subtitler must keep in mind whenever subtitling. First of all, subtitles must be acceptable in the target culture, in the target language, according to linguistic norms, lexical choices, idioms, grammatical rules. I take an example. If you are translating a film from English to German, who is the German representative here? Okay, we haven't met before, so you can confirm that whenever we have a subordinate clause, subordinate sentence, the verb comes at the end of the sentence, not at the beginning. So this is a grammatical rule that we must keep in mind in order to make the original text acceptable in the target language. Legibility and readability. They seem similar, actually they are not. Legibility has to do with the layout of the subtitles. Subtitles must have a very clear layout. So the position on the screen is very important. They must never overlap with signs. If there is a sign on the film, then the subtitle should be raised on top of the screen. The font is important, the color is important, especially for in SDH, so in the subtitles for deaf and hard of hearing. We will see that later on. Readability instead is quite different because it has to do with how much information is written in relation to how fast the viewer can read them. Okay, so it has to do with speeding rates and density of information. We should always avoid to write one word or even two words in less than 1 second, because for sure the human eye will never read that. Then synchronicity. How annoying are out-of-sync subtitles? Very, very much, yeah. Synchronicity means that one of the main activities of the subtitler is to, as I told earlier, to put the right time-in, time-out codes to each subtitle. Of course, in relation to lip movements and to non-verbal elements as well. Okay, we have not to care only about the lip movements, but also about actions or noises that are in the film. Finally, relevance. We must always remember as subtitlers that we have a source text to be respected. Okay, so we can use whatever translation strategy we want or we need: condensation, explication, paraphrasing, deletion of repetitions or hesitation, but we must stick to the original one. And we must be sure that coherence and consistency is there in one subtitle and also among different subtitles. Okay.
Just to say all this slide in two words.
Yeah.
If everything is okay, subtitles go unnoticed. If there is a typo, if there is a wrong segmentation, you know, anything that is not actually perfect, the jump to the eye, well, it's very unfair, to be honest with you. It's a tough job. Because everyone comments if they are wrong. Nobody says, you okay, well done. Have you seen some films where subtitles were bad here? Yeah. Any titles? No, you didn't see anything wrong said. Yeah,
hearing that.
Because I heard, you know, if they know I deal with subtitles, they stop me when I'm working. I was curious to see if you noticed something.
I have not, but today we went to see in the morning in screening of Celicia Mal's short film, and then there was another feature film. And I was surprised because it was in English, but they didn't have subtitles only in Italian. They didn't have subtitles also in English. Like, it was just the audio. And yeah. I was a bit surprised because, like, it's international.
Yeah, I was there as well. There was one mistake in Italian.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was un amico
con gli
apostrofi.
Wow, that's terrible.
That's
evident,
yeah.
But then
the
feature film afterwards had some scenes that
had
only had the Italian subtitles, but the voice was the original language, so basically the non-Italian speakers couldn't understand.
Oh.
A big portion is like, could be day 5. Was
sorry, what? Can you tell me the title of the film?
21 Days Until the World Ends.
Oh.
But also, like, you can say it's your
well, we can stop now.
Like, sometimes when they speak, like, in a movie or voiceover, maybe it's like the audio is not very good. And I think there should be subtitles, like,
yeah.
Because it's an international event.
I noticed today in the Jasmila Zbanić, I Know Your Soul, there was a child that was talking to the parents, and he asked something, and because I knew the language, I heard what he asked, but he was just a bit quieter, but they didn't translate it at all.
In
any version. They didn't even put, he asked, and he put something in the grave, and nothing was translated.
I find it very distracting with kind of couple of films that we've seen that have a part that's in English, and while they're reading the English subtitles, while they're talking in another language, it's okay. And then they suddenly stop because they start speaking in English, and I find this extremely distracting because I don't understand why can they just subtitle, even if it's in English, because you're already in the act of like...
Yeah, that happens in some, in the main sections, everything is subtitled in English as well, even if it's the film is... spoken in English. Yeah. Because you also because you know most of the people attending the festival is actually they know English, but they're not native English, so that particularly helps. So I don't know. And the idea is to go into that, but you know, the festival.
It's like you do this approach, and then you're taken away, and I don't understand why. Even if it's like a couple of sentences, you don't need to not put them in because it's in English.
And some other times, it's the film director that doesn't want to have some parts subtitled. Because they say that, you know, if subtitles appears, obviously you are distracted a little bit by the images. And so what happened in some cases is that subtitles are already being inserted in the DCP, for example, for the Italian version, which by the norm here in Venice, you need to have Italian for the image. And while you can manage until the last moment of screen language, so sometimes they are not really consistent because the director decides at the last moment to change something. And also we fight a lot, for example, when we have Spanish films that doesn't require subtitles because the director doesn't want to have Italian subtitles because Spanish and Italian are very similar, so they say, well, there are just a few lines. I prefer not to have that subtitle. But of course, English, it's a really different language, so people follow the movie can't really understand anything about Spanish. So it's very complicated. It's much more complicated than you think, but thank you for your comments.
And it's really annoying because
it's terrible. It's terrible. Yeah. It's better to have subtitles late than anticipated.
Yeah, sometimes I laugh before something.
Did you remember the film? So I can.
No, not here. Just
not here in general.
Yeah, as a good habit, it should be postponed to the noise, to the action, or.
Yeah, I can't watch comedies with like subtitles because it ruins all the. Every single joke comes before the delivery.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, now.
You understand how important this is.
Yeah, and again, about synchronicity, I want to add some. A thing that actually I think you should say, Fede. Subtitles here in Venice are not automatic, okay? They are launched live. Did you realize that?
No.
The electronic subtitles that you see on screen, off screen, are actually managed completely independently for the film. So we have an operator that actually starts it. It's not actually manual, it's automatic. They can accelerate or decelerate a little bit. So in the beginning, you may notice that the first two or three subtitles
it's like gap.
Could be a little bit late, the fuse, and then they should reach the synchronicity, but it's actually independent. And it was very difficult a few years ago before digital distribution, where we have prints, you know, 35mm prints, where the mechanic element was still very present, and films were actually projected with two projectors, with one projector, with two with another projector, and those two projectors actually ran with different speed, so it was really complicated to synchronize that. But it was really fascinating. That was really, you know, not really exciting, I would use it.
Okay, any other questions? I saw maybe Dora, yes.
So can you say that again?
Yeah.
I have a question about translation and how subtitles are translated for Venice in terms of the Italian translation. How do you source translators? Just because obviously there are some languages that are less accessible or it's harder to find translators from. I also do a lot of time learning some of my kind of practices that you can kind of translate the English language into the local language, which
is a bit problematic, but that's what you get to do. So I was wondering if Venice is a bit more
ethical. Unfortunately, in the business, we go through English always as the pivotal language, and also the producer creates the English version, which sometimes is really, you know, bad. And that if that version is bad, of course, then you have the problem of translating into languages with a completely different structure. And if you, if, for example, translate the Spanish film into Italian and you go through English, you may have a completely different translation. So we try, but what in the industry is done is actually going to, through English, and then you have a second revision by a translator that knows the original language and knows the type of language and tries to accommodate things. And also reading speed changes from one country to another. If you possibly notice that here in Venice, we try to have the two strings of subtitles with the same time code, just to avoid that, like, sort of a Christmas tree effect, actually. That's how I call it. But you have subtitles that actually disappear in different moments, so it's really many different aspects and affects at least the perception of the film. But Italian, for example, is a language that is one third longer than English in general. And also, Italian audience is not actually used to read subtitles because they grew up with Italian. So readability time should be longer. And so it's actually a compromise but it's not the optimal solution. If we are activating just one language on the platform, the time code should change if they are done properly. And in terms of selectively translating translators, we are actually in the moment where things are changing, because I can't avoid to tell you that we are going into a first step with automatic translation, because everyone is doing that at the moment. So in the past, there was a first subtitle that was not really maybe expert enough. And then a revision by a translator with a sound experience and also a knowledge about film, and to make sure that all the international references were taken and so on. Now that first step is done by the machine, and then we have a revision by a translator. But the subtitles that you see on the image are actually responsibility of the film producer, and so sometimes we see really horrible things. So, you know, they use Google Translation, and you know, it's really disappointing. If you love films, and then you see those things. And it's also, for me, really, I can't understand how a filmmaker spent 5 years of his life developing his project, trying, you know, to polish the script in the better way if possible. And they actually don't care about the translated version, even if we know that more than 50% of the revenues produced by films right now come from audiences that experience that film in a different language. So that's something that has to change.
Yes.
What does SDH mean?
SDH stands for Subtitles for Deaf and Hard of Hearing.
Okay, so we have three lines?
Yeah, I explained that now. They can have three lines. Okay, let's go on. As for the general guidelines, subtitles do have change actually from country to country according to also grammatical rules, for example. But there are some guidelines that are commonly shared, okay, at least within the European Union, and they take into account three aspects: timing, layout, and content. According to timing, as I was mentioning before, synchronization is of paramount importance, and this is done through the spotting, so time in, time out. Whenever the template is created, the subtitler, you know, moves the subtitle back and forward into the along the soundbar that is given in the subtitling software, and subtitles should, as much as possible, not overlap with shot and scene changes, okay? Because these divert the attention of the viewer. And not only they must adhere as much as possible to the rhythm of the film, okay? And a subtitler must always, you know, be sure that the viewer is given enough time enough to take in the image, the sound, and the subtitle as part of the flow of viewing the film. Subtitles must never be a second film, otherwise there is something wrong. Duration, less than 1 second, it can be hardly a word of 5 characters. More than 6 seconds, there's the risk that the viewer reads the subtitle twice, and this is a, you know, diversion of attention as well, okay? As for the layout, as Paul was mentioning, we have in intralingual or interlingual subtitles usually maximum 2 lines, okay? And usually they should be, in theory, in a pyramidal shape, so the first line shorter than the second line. Actually, this is not always possible. For SDH, we can even have 3 lines, okay? For example, whenever multiple voices are there in the film, okay? And each voice is introduced by a dash. Characters per line. I was mentioning this aspect before with the distribution formats. We do this aspect is different from medium to medium, okay? So in TV, we have maximum 37, 39 characters. In cinema instead, we can go up to 43, okay, just because we have, as I was telling, a wider screen. Space is included. Of course, this is something that is counted by the software, okay? Subtitlers are not counting the characters. The position, at the bottom of the screen, avoiding overlaps with signs or on-screen text, and in this case, we have to write the subtitle. Legibility, clear fonts, punctuation is very important as well. Not only because we are talking about a written text, so we must, you know, look, be careful about the linguistic sign, the punctuation, but also for deaf and hard of hearing audience, because punctuation means pauses, okay? And also, as I was telling before, dash, for example, whenever we see a dash, this means that a new voice is speaking. Formatting is very important as well. We have, for example, some conventions, especially that are very important, especially when it comes to SDH. Because whenever, for example, a subtitle is in italics, can you guess what it means? Italics? Yes, but when is it used?
When we want to accentuate something, maybe?
No. If you... Yeah?
Singing
is one of the cases where italics is used. And?
Singing.
Off-screen, yes. Off-screen voices. Or interior monologues. Okay, so off-screen voices... usually are, you know, identified with italics. It's, of course... Yeah, tell me?
I would like to ask, how do you identify characters who are off-screen? So if, for example, we have a conversation and many people are talking, but you see a close-up of a certain person, how do you identify the others who are talking? Because I've seen many different solutions for that, like colors, named
Richland Park,
named with another screen, or using different sizes of the screen.
There are actually different conventions in different countries and different territories. Well, I mentioned before the European Accessibility Act. One of the main aim of this new legislation is actually try to, standardize these conventions in a way that all countries with all the same parameters are actually followed. But it's very difficult because, you know, Spanish people is used to some sort of convention they don't want to change, and the German people doesn't want to change. They want to change as well. So, you know, it's complicated. But it's I think you know, technology helps now because you can change colors, for example. You didn't do that in the past. It's you have to spend a few minutes to understand in the film you are watching, what are the conventions that are following? It's not really so. So. Sorry? I hate colors in cinema, for example. I think they but people with hearing impairments would like to have colors because it's easier for them to understand. But, you know,
for like colorblind people, that's a problem.
Yeah, sometimes it is used. Yes, in fact, if you see here, I also put brackets. Why? Because brackets in SDH are used in order to identify the speaker. Between brackets, you indicate the name of the character who is speaking, okay, in case of multiple voices. We will see that later on in the short film.
But only with SDH, only with
some yes.
For the hard of hearing. Otherwise, you know, hearing people should be able to understand who's speaking. But I understand that could be difficult if we have two different voices off screen and it's not actually easy to understand. I want to tell you add something. You mentioned all the main parameters. I think that what is really important is segmentation that has been done in a way that syntactic unit should remain on the same line or at least in the same subtitles, because that helps you to read with more faster. And also the fact that we in some different medium we change from the number of characters, that actually make things really complicated, because you can't actually move a word in the following line, because you have to make sure that the articles that goes to the subject, that the verbs are together. So it's complicated, but that's
yeah, actually, this was part of the content aspect. Chunking or segmentation of subtitles is of paramount importance for subtitles and also for those who read subtitles. We have to make sure that subtitles are divided into semantically independent units. Okay, so we should never divide subject and verb, article and noun, noun and adjective, and so on. It's clear that this is not possible. You see that while we are speaking, so many constraints and limitations are present in while subtitling. So this is why dialogue editing in some cases is very important. Okay, so there is a part of the process where you have to edit somehow dialogues, of course respecting the source text as well. But for example, avoiding repetitions, using synonyms, shorter synonyms, in order to gain some characters. Okay, it's all a matter of balance and even counts, unfortunately. So segmentation is very
Sorry, I think you kind of broke on that already, but my question was sometimes in languages there's like really specific words that have a really specific meaning that's sometimes really really hard to like translate. Does that come into like dialogue editing as well, then, that you try to like find as close of a synonym as possible? Because sometimes I've seen like for example, like when I've seen a Polish film and I understand Polish, like the subtitling doesn't really match, and you can really tell like some people are having a better time if they understand the native language than just reading the subtitles.
It happens, actually. This is a matter that has to do with translation. And here we should open a wide topic on translation issues and translation and translation techniques. We should be as accurate as possible, okay? There are cases where this is not possible as well. So in those cases, I do not remember, there's a word in German that we do not have in Italian. I do not remember what word is, but in that case, it happened to me that we had to keep the word as it was, into inverted commas and keep it there, or in italics, okay? We should not do that, actually. We should try to, you know, use maybe two words that are somehow are closer to that term, but if it is not possible, it is better to keep the term as it is. Yes, Paul.
Very interesting about the color, because usually they are obviously white, but the other things I also used to watch
yellow.
And also the director, like for example, I want to do this better than being in color pink. The festival to respect that, or in some color pink color, or it has to be always white nowadays.
Here in Venice, they should be always white because the festival regulation says white. But to be honest with you, those regulations go back to possibly the 90s when you actually couldn't have subtitles in pink. I think they should be. If it's a creative choice, it has to be respected.
Makes sense, yeah.
And having said that, of course, they try to even. To have that in a uniform way. I've seen subtitles in yellow in some times as well. I personally don't like it, but you know, I'm old, and you may like them. So
it's like a more vintage, like feeling. Yeah. Like a vintage feeling with a yellow subtitle.
Yeah. Or Tarantino, right?
Yeah. You know what? I think that if subtitles become in a way creative. And so they become more visible. That's a good thing, because at least it's a way to make the audience aware of the fact that they are an element that has to be discussed, and you know, it's the object of a choice, of a specific choice. So having said that, now there is a lot of, you know, there are a lot of scholars talking about creative subtitles. That's something that really I don't like, because I think, you know, subtitles must be there to let people that couldn't understand that film to experience the film in the most similar way to the people that could, you know, perceive it, watch it in the original language. So you shouldn't try to alter that. It's a question of equality, and you have to make your best to allow people who don't follow the language, who can't hear, to enjoy the films, respecting the original vision of the author. That's why I think that we should have more contact between the creative team and the translators. And but if the choice is of the director wants to have, you know, pink subtitles or purple, he's free to trust them.
What does it consist of?
Sorry, can you say that again? Well, it means, for example, if changing the position, they are not in the standard position, you know, in the lower third of the video, but maybe they come out from the mouth of the speakers. And we have already some cases. And also, there was, I don't remember the title now, but at the Sundance Film Festival this year, there was a film where part of the actors were actually hearing impaired, and so we had sign language as well. And the subtitles for the choice of the director came out, they were very close to the mouth, and which is very immediate in a way. I originally thought, I was also part of a European project about this, I thought it was distracting, because I think that if you start watching a film with subtitles always in the same position, it would be easier. But actually, then we tried using eye tracking technology. You know, eye tracking technology is actually detects the movements of your eye fixation and can report exactly how much time you spend in a different, you know, small portion of the video, and that's. Was used also to demonstrate that segmentation must be done in a way to allow you reading faster. But also they try to use subtitles in this creative way, and they did some receptive studies with questionnaires about the comprehension, and actually people said that they were happier, and they managed to see more, you know, and also the expressions of the actors in a way that, that was more satisfying. So possibly we are going into that direction.
Yeah, because I often feel like when I watch a film with subtitles, I constantly jump between stuff
that
don't actually suit performance that much, and it bothers me a lot.
Yeah.
So I could imagine that being that close to the eyes maybe, or to the mouth, really helpful to just stay in every area.
Yeah, and definitely, you know, subtitles became an element, a creative element, because they are opening the image in a more strong way.
Yes, tell me, Cecilia. I think it is possible, but maybe the background in that case would change. Sometimes we have black background with white words.
Yeah.
It may happen. Or we should move it where it is readable.
Yeah.
Well, that depends also on the medium, because now you can have a sort of a tri-dimensional level. You can make insert them in a way that you can read them even if you have a white. Yeah. But they don't, you know, that depends on the fact that subtitles are always done very quickly and they are not tested enough. But it can be done right now.
And I didn't have this problem here, but it is where I went to the first where it was just not visible and I didn't find
I think we have to go to what you described.
Yes, just very briefly, because then we will see the short film. Audio description. How many of you have already experienced audio description, audio described films? I think not so many. Okay, two. Okay. So we know that audio description is used for blind people or visually impaired people, partially sighted people actually. We have to describe the visual element. And audio description services were introduced later than subtitles, and especially those for live events. There are actually European guidelines also in this case on how to write audio description, but mainly studies on audio description are focused on reception. Okay, let's see what are the audio description features. I mean, I am an audio describer, and I have to make sure that these are the points where I should focus my attention. We have to, let's say, reply, this is very simple, of course, reply to four different questions. And what we reply must have also a relevance in the context and in the target audience, with the target audience for which this audio description is written. What to describe? It seems easy, actually it is not. Because first of all, the basic is that I am not a describer, I am sighted. I am sighted. So I am a sighted person and I have visual priorities different to those of blind people. This is why also according to from my experience, it was of paramount importance being in a team where also blind people worked with me to the audio descriptions, because I could have their feedback immediately on the choices I made. Generally speaking, we should describe the visual details, characters, physical aspects, actions, setting, costumes, fabrics, colors, even colors. Because first of all, blind people have their own ideas of what a color is, but also because we are not sure that our target audience is made of completely blind people. We may have people that experience blindness later on during their life, and so they have an idea of what a color means. But also, we should not forget that sounds are important to be described, because a blind person cannot perceive where that sound comes from. When to describe, whenever there is no dialogue. Also in this case, we should try to avoid that whenever there is silence, the audio describer puts there a huge amount of information. Okay, so we have also to respect silence in films, because also silence has a meaning. How to describe? Being audio description, also in this sense, somehow a translation of image, the audio describer should be as much neutral as possible. Neutrality, objectivity should be achieved, because we must give the blind audience the possibility to give his, her interpretation. Okay, we do not have to interpret anything. So in this case, we must be as neutral as possible. It's clear, however, that if we have to describe something, a content for children, we will not use the same language and the same level of neutrality that we would use for adults, for example. As for the language, also language is very important in audio description, because we must try to use evocative terms, detailed language, and clear sentences, avoiding sequences of subordinate sentences, because these may lead to the loss of attention by the viewer. And how much to describe? Also, in this case, it is a matter of balance, not too much nor too little, okay? And in this very sense, on how much to write, the fact that I can be, I can work with a blind person helps a lot. Finally, I mentioned here audio introductions just because they are actually one of the things that differentiate audio description for live events to from audio description for cinema, because in cinema you will never have audio descriptions, audio introductions are descriptive texts that are listened by the blind audience at the beginning, prior to the beginning of the performance. Okay, so for example in theaters, the blind audience is invited to come 10 or 15 minutes earlier to take a seat and then take the headset where they will listen to the audio description. And the first part they will listen to is the audio introduction with all those details that cannot be told and described during the performance. Okay, this is not so common in films, actually, probably not even present. Now, okay, all what we said can be somehow summarized and practically watched here in this film.
Before starting watching the film, I just wanted to tell you something. Try, if you are watching Netflix or some platforms or your television in your country, try to activate the description sometimes, because it's really fascinating. It makes you understand how we see things in a different way. At least in my experience, I realize that people see things that I would never notice, and some others are actually left out. It's interesting. It's a very complicated job. It's very difficult to be objective, because we are obviously all influenced by what we see. But I think it's an experience that you have to try. Also, and then we're going with the short. Have you seen a film called After Work by an Italian, Swedish director about the evolution of work, of the professions in the next 10 and 15 years, and the fact that 50% of what we do now will not be actually a profession in the future? We have to find new professions, new jobs. And I want to talk to you very quickly about two of them. One is the fact that we are trying, not me, but in the industry, to create the profession of the accessibility coordinator. I'm sure you heard about the intimacy coordinator that is on set trying to manage the right way to shoot those scenes. The idea is to create an accessibility coordinator is to have a professional on set that knows about all this stuff, all the inclusivity and the representation, you know, constraints that we have now, and that can say to the director of photography or the director, you can't do this, or if you do this, you are leaving out that kind of audience, etc. So this is one of the future positions that you may have a look at, and because it's a very similar to a scriptwriter, but making sure that everything is taken into account in terms of representation of the objects, of the different categories of people. In another job, Chiara mentioned re-speaking before. Respeaking is a way to have a live transcription of everything by someone repeating to the automatic recognition software. And it's very common in intralingual, but it's now going into interlingual. So if that's, they say, is going to be the next simultaneous translation thing. So it's something that it's actually can be done by someone who is trained as an interpreter and who is trained also as a speech recognition, someone who is also very familiar with technology. And that's also a new profession that is coming out. The European Union now is launching a new project trying to define the perfect curriculum for doing this. And that's something that could be interesting because it's something that can be done from remote. And I find it fascinating, so have a look at it.
Yeah, I would like to add something on the accessibility coordinator. We have to reflect on the fact that if a film or a production is, you know, is thought about in an accessible way since the beginning, it's easier and much cheaper than working on it after it is released and after it is produced. So this is something very, very interesting, and maybe I should look for it.
Okay, so this short is actually selected by the Oscar short, short line.
Short.
Thank you. You see, I need accessibility, and it's in Italian. Audio subtitle. There are subtitles for the deaf and hard of hearing in English. And you are going to hear also audio subtitles. So the original audio is a little bit lower when there are audio subtitles. And there is audio description with a different voice. So there is a little bit of everything. But it gives you the idea.
Yeah, exactly. It is so difficult to find a film that has all these accessibility services all in once. Okay, usually we have the blind part and the hard, deaf and hard of hearing part. But in this way, we wanted to put them all together in order to show you what it means.
Anyway, we don't have the time to see it all. So
no, not at all. But just to give you an idea. It was shot by and directed by Daphne Di Cinto, that might be familiar to some of you because she was part of the cast of the successful Netflix series Bridgerton. I don't know if you know that. She also shot this short film that tells actually the story. Okay, it starts.
With the support of the municipality of Alfonsine, the municipality of Dozza, the municipality of Ravenna, the municipality of Imola, con AVI, in association with Map Italia, Oltre Ravel APS. On a black background, white writing, the more, a red lily decorates the final O caption, 1529. After years of turbulence and a long exile, the House of Medici forms an alliance with the Habsburg King during the Treaty of Barcelona. The Medici family prepare to return to Florence victorious, but there are only three men remaining who belong to the main lineage of the family, all three born illegitimately. Yet, in ignoring one's roots, there can't be peace. Daytime, in the Papal Palace, three portraits hang on a scarlet wall of an elegant antechamber. Alessandro de' Medici looks at them. He's about 20 years old. He's of mixed race, his hair black and curly. He wears a black velvet doublet with red and gold embroidery on his chest. He scrutinizes the portraits of the male Medici family members. Their features are angular. One wears a ring embedded with a red stone on his right index finger. Alessandro raises his chin. He clenches his fist, opens it. He wears a ring with an inlaid M. A black page boy of about 7 enters. He looks at Alessandro and stops in front of the side wall, his head bowed. Ippolito de' Medici joins Alessandro. He wears red papal robes.
I have no intention of asking him.
Good.
I don't see why you still linger around. I'd like to see Florence again. In that regard, once re-established, I already have a position in mind for you as ambassador to the Ottoman Empire. You'll feel comfortable there. More people with your hair. The gown does not make the friar, dear cousin. Nor the cardinal. Nor the Pope, for that matter.
Behind them, Pope Clement VII enters.
Follow me.
Alessandro and Ippolito turn simultaneously, their shoulders bumping. Alessandro extends an arm for Ippolito to go first. They enter a chapel. Clement lays 2 notebooks on the table. Ippolito kneels down and takes his hand. He kisses his ring. He stands up, looking him in the eyes.
You look better. You sound displeased. I'm pleasurably surprised at how quickly God answered my prayers for your health. Your Eminence.
Alessandro bends down to kiss his ring.
I should have hoped for a warmer welcome back to the land.
Okay, stop it there. Here was because I think you got an idea. Actually, audio description, okay, with a female voice, audio subtitles and subtitles for, actually, in this case, they are interlingual subtitles, but they are for the deaf and hard of hearing. Okay, so this is just to give you an idea. Any questions?
It's very complicated.
Yeah.
If you are not used to that. Also because subtitles actually make things even worse.
Yes.
And also the original language is very low and you hear the voiceover, so it's complicated. If you are not used, it's complicated.
Yeah, actually this is a product that has been made ad hoc just for this, you know, for this context. Yes, tell me. How many hands?
I wanted to touch upon the voiceover. Sorry? I wanted to touch upon like the voiceover part. Because I think it was so poor like compared to what we have in Eastern Europe. Like it was like completely imbalanced. I think that voice like below should be a little bit louder. Because here I was like subconsciously trying to listen to the original one so I can like the gist of how it sounds like and how the original is like, but it was like completely overshadowed by the voiceover.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree.
Yeah, it should be a
bit
louder.
It's also true that you are used to voiceover.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I think I know what good voiceover is like because it's so prevalent from what I'm from, and I think we will be doing it in a decent way.
Massive thing. Actually, they are professional speakers. I don't know if dubbing actors actually are hired for. I do not think so. Yes, actually, this is something that is common. 2 different voices for 2 different characters.
You mean in audio subtitles?
In audio subtitles. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't like that, but I... So it's very similar to dubbing, but you know, it's... I don't think that dubbers are actually good in doing audio description and audio subtitles because they tend to interpret
too much.
So why you have to try to be a little bit, you know, this type of...
Yes, I see exactly what the point, but then there are also the actors themselves are interpreting the part. So I feel like maybe sometimes
the voice was distorted. And for example, if like the actor itself is doing really a interpretation of that. So there, I don't know. It's like,
no, I can see your point.
Yeah.
We can see that. But if you would talk to blind people, most of them would say that the voice must be as neutral as possible.
Can you respond to that quickly? Because the thing that I mentioned about the original being slightly higher, like louder, mm-hmm. it solves part of the problem because then you can differentiate who is speaking and it's not
yeah.
All right. Blurred. I think you're right.
Yeah?
Yeah, the question about the audiovisual description, so that's a rather slow scene, right? So you can feel that the woman is giving a lot of information that can actually pass kind of the categories. But what if this very dense scene and you're allowed to slow down the rhythm of the film?
No.
Never.
So what if it's like a really fast-paced action scene?
In that case, you should only use two words. Even creating incomplete sentences, we are not forced to, we are not obliged to create subject, verb, or the object and adjectives, sentences. We can, the part of the work of the audio describer is also to create a text that even without the film has makes sense. So if in a previous description, if in a previous clip, audio clip, I presented, the Alessandro de' Medici, for example, saying it in an extended way, and then the subject doesn't change, I should avoid to say that, because it takes time, okay? And this has to do with coherence. Okay, it is not necessary that I do repeat always, here in this scene, Alessandro de' Medici is blah, blah, blah. The blind person knows that Alessandro de' Medici is there because we told that before, okay? And it's a completely different way of, taking in the information. It's hard for us, I do understand that. And the first thing that comes to the eyes in these cases is that yes, there was so much time to describe all those details. And what about if time is not there? If time is not there, we have to reduce not the details, but we have to find a way to say the same details with less words or shorter words. Did I reply?
Also, when we do revisions with blind people, they cut out a lot of things.
Yes, they cut
out.
Actually, yes.
Over description of anything, they say that. So, but it's strange for us, I understand that. I think we don't have time anymore. And I hope you are not too bored. And
I hope so. I think, Dora, do we have time for another question? Only one?
This is a very general one in terms of how we get to be
You mean the background, the studies?
The background of being like a certificate who says that you're good to go.
Well, actually, in my experience, I actually graduated in languages for international communication and yes. And then all my experience is based, much of my experience is based on theaters. I started there with interns, as well as I started as an intern with Fred and Subti. Actually, I do not think that at the time being there is a certificate saying, okay, you are good to do that. In my case, it's only a matter of experience. Even masters, of course, master courses, yes. In accessibility to the media, yes, of course.
There's not a certificate, actually, an official certificate, as far as I know.
No.
So you may have a certificate of attendance that you follow an MA, or you may have a degree, but there is not a certificate that says that you are a good subtitler.
Also, because in these cases, this is a very, practical activity. So many studies, so many theories, so many aspects to know. I show you just one you know, one out of 10, but experience. You have to be on the field, you have to be on the stage, you have to work and train.
If I can just add something, good subtitler have a sound film knowledge, and possibly not a language. They know the language very well, but usually the best ones have a sound knowledge of films, and they must love films because, you know, it's you feel that you give your contribution, that you have to make it, you know, better and not spoil it in any way. So if you are attracted by that, companies usually ask for a translation test. They send you a short or, you know, an extract for a film. Because you need to have a knack for that. It's of course you can learn it, but you really need to love it and to understand that you know, traditional translators, they don't understand that they have to leave things out, but they don't understand that people can be forced to read all the time. And they don't understand that there were visual elements that must be seen. So,
thank you, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Meet at 4:30. Please be on time. 27 minutes only.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.